Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. We're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, from the fourth canto, chapter 22, entitled Prithu Maharaj's Meeting with the Kumaras, text number 13. Kachina kusalam nata.
Kachina kusalam nata.
Yasanavapaitasme
Yasanavapaitasme
Patitanam Swakarmavi
Patitanam Swakarmavi
Kachinna Kushalam Nata
Kachinna Kushalam Nata
Indriya Tartavedina
Indriya Tartavedina
Yasanavapaitasme
Yasanavapaitasme
Patitanam Swakarmadi
Patitanam Swakarmadi
Kachinna Kusalam Nata
Kachinna Kusalam Nata
Indriyartarta Vedinam
Indriyartarta Vedinam
Patitanam Swakarmadi
Patitanam Swakarmadi
Kachin
Kachin
Weather
Na
Hour Kusalam, good fortune. Nataha,
Nataha,
O masters.
Indriyarta,
sense gratification is the ultimate goal of life. Artavedinam, persons who understand only sense gratification. Vyasana,
Vyasana,
illness.
Illness.
Avape,
Avape,
gut.
Itasmi,
in this material existence.
Patitanam,
those who are fallen.
Swakarmabhi,
by their own ability. Translation. Prithu Maharaj inquired from the sages about persons entangled in this dangerous material existence because of their previous actions. Could such persons, whose only aim is sense gratification, be blessed with any good fortune? Purport. Maharaj Prithu did not ask the Kumaras about their good fortune, for the Kumaras are always auspicious by dint of their life in celibacy. Since they are always engaged on the path of liberation, there is no question of ill fortune. In other words, Brahmanas and Vaishnavas, who are strictly following the path of spiritual advancement, are always fortunate. The question was asked by Prithu Maharaj for his own sake, since he was in the position of a Grihastha and in charge of the royal authority. Kings are not only Grihasthas, who are generally absorbed in sense gratification, but are sometimes employed to kill animals in hunting because they have to practice the killing art. Otherwise, it's very difficult for them to fight their enemies. Such things are not auspicious. Four kinds of sinful activities, associating with women for illicit sex, eating meat, intoxication and gambling, are allowed for the Kshatriyas. For political reasons, sometimes they have to take to these sinful activities. Kshatriyas do not refrain from gambling. One vivid example is the Pandavas. When the Pandavas were challenged by the opposite party, Duryodhana, to gamble and risk their kingdom, they could not refrain, and by that gambling they lost their kingdom and their wife was insulted. Similarly, the Kshatriyas cannot refrain from fighting if challenged by the opposite party. Therefore, Prithu Maharaj, taking consideration of all these facts, inquired whether there is any auspicious path. Grihastha life is inauspicious because Grihastha means consciousness for sense gratification, and as soon as there is sense gratification, one's position is always full of danger. This material world is said to be padam padamya vipadam natesam, dangerous in every step, Bhagavatam 10.14.58. Everyone in this material world is struggling hard for sense gratification. Clearing all these points, Maharaj Prithu inquired from the four Kumaras about the fallen conditioned souls who are rotting in this material world due to their past bad or inauspicious activities. Is there any possibility for their auspicious spiritual life? In this verse, the word indriya tatavedinam is very significant. It indicates persons whose only aim is to satisfy the senses. They are also described as patitanam, or fallen. Only one who stops all activities for sense gratification is considered to be elevated. Another significant word is svakarmibhi. One becomes fallen by dint of his own past bad activities. Everyone is responsible for his fallen condition because of his own activities. When activities are changed to devotional service, one's auspicious life begins. Om Jnanatimarandasya Jnanana Salakaya Chakshurunitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Nama Sri Chaitanya Mano Vistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Svapanantikam Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Sri Vasavi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. So Maharaj Prithu himself was an exemplary personality. Maharaj Prithu was a personality whose only mission in this world was the mission of the Supreme Lord. He certainly was not a person who was engaged in sense gratification or anything of that kind. Maharaj Prithu is known as a Shakti Avesha avatar of the Supreme Lord, one who was invested with Bhupalana Shakti, or with the power to protect the earth. It is a special, extraordinary power to act as a righteous king. Still, he's asking these relevant questions because we all take different positions in this world, and it is very difficult to live a pure life in the material world because the material energy is very powerful. It is said, Daiviyesa gunamayi mama maya duratyaya. It is said that this divine energy of mine, the material energy, is very, very difficult to overcome. In fact, it is said it is practically impossible to overcome the material energy. It is said that there are two energies, the parashakti and the aparashakti. The supreme or higher energy is the living being, and the lower energy or the external energy is the material energy made up of eight elements. Still, it is said that these eight elements, this energy made of eight elements, is more powerful than the superior energy, the living being. So why is this? It is because that energy is getting its special attraction from the Supreme Lord. Because the material energy is the reflection of the spiritual energy. And therefore, it has a special power to attract and bewilder the living entity. So, in this way, the living being is always prone to fall to Maya. So, if in these verses and in this purport the point is made that the Grihastha Ashram is an inauspicious path, it is not that the majority of our movement should feel depressed, right? Because it is a fact we are a Grihastha-based movement. So, it is not that we should feel, oh, here we start again, Grihastha bashing. Right? So much of this we have already heard and had that I cannot take it anymore to always have to hear that a grihastha is a second-class citizen. But that is not actually the purpose of Bhagavatam. But the purpose of Bhagavatam is to encourage us to always look for purification. And not to just in a gross way look for purification, but in a more and more refined way to look for purification. It's easy when one is dealing with the four regulative principles, because they are easy to identify, whether one follows or not. That's easy. But to give up more subtle material contamination is much more difficult. Because the subtle contamination, such as the tendency to be proud, or the tendency to bend the rules of the scriptures a little bit and not follow all the finer rules and regulations and all these things, a little slack, that is more difficult. Much more difficult. So in this way, the scriptures are always calling out for to increase our purification. So it is said that the Grihastha Ashram in itself should not be taken as auspicious. Because the Grihastha Ashram is the ashram where we are trying in this world to create an enjoyable condition of life. At least to some extent. Brahmacharya is not meant for that. Brahmacharya life, we see the example of Vamanadev. Vamanadev asked Bali Maharaj for 3 steps of land. And Bali Maharaj said, "Oh, foolish boy, why are you asking only for 3 steps of land? So little you are asking. Don't you realize I can give you a whole planet?" And Vamana said, "No, no, no." He said, "I'm a brahmachari. What more do I need? Only 3 steps of land will do. 3 steps of land is enough to lie down on. What more do I need?" So no, no, I'd be satisfied with 3 steps of land. Of course, they were 3 big steps, that was another thing. But the principle is established there that one should be satisfied with very simple means in the Brahmacharya Ashram. The 4 Kumaras, they were such brahmacharis, and it is said their life was all auspicious. Of course, they were perfect brahmacharis. In our movement, we cannot necessarily make such distinction. The 4 Kumaras, they were brahmacharis in the true sense of the term. They were always cultivating spiritual knowledge. They were not keeping any possessions for themselves. They were dedicating their whole life to the pleasure of the spiritual master, and therefore they were transcendentalists. That is the real position of the brahmachari in the Vedic culture. In our movement, it is not exactly like that. You cannot make these strong demarcations. Sometimes the brahmacharis have more money than the grihasthas, and generally the sannyasis definitely have more money than the grihasthas, right? Most of the cases. What to say? Materially speaking, it doesn't always work out, the Varna Ashram, which exists in the traditional culture. So we cannot judge each other like that. The real essence, though, is to serve Krishna, of course. But the principles of Varna Ashram can be helpful. They give us, when one is very transcendentally situated, it doesn't really matter what one does. Right? One can change his roles according to the need of the time. But when we are not always transcendental, then we may find ourselves in a movement that is transcendental. We may do devotional service that is transcendental. We may chant the holy name, which is transcendental. We may take transcendental prasadam. We get the transcendental darshan of the deities. So much is transcendental, but we ourselves may not be transcendental. So finding ourselves in that position, then at least we should be in the mode of goodness. So Varnashram is for that purpose, to help us to become regulated, to become fixed, so there's clear prescribed duty, so that we can be can rise to the mode of goodness. And in our movement, that is the idea. But everything is going through a simplified purification process from the Vedic tradition. We are very quickly brought up to the Brahminical platform. In the Vedic level, in the Vedic style of initiation, initiation means the sacred thread, the Upanaya Sanskara. That's the Vedic system. But in the Pancharatriki system, which we are following, it is not like that. In the Pancharatrika system, first there's purification. Right? There's intense purification, and therefore there's first Harinam Diksha, and then after only the Upanaya, or the second initiation, the Brahminical initiation. Right? And that is then establishing that one is based in the mode of goodness, and that from that platform one can act only for purification. So it is said a brahmana is meant to be dedicated to spiritual life exclusively. A brahmana is not meant to engage in worldly enjoyment. That is not a brahmana's business. A brahmana is not meant to engage in sense gratification. A brahmana is meant to live really a very strict life of purification, simple. He lives with very simple means. He's always cultivating knowledge from the scriptures and then teaching it. That is a brahmana. A Vaishnava, it said brahmana means he knows that the ultimate goal of life is Brahman. Vaishnava, he knows that the ultimate goal of life is Vishnu. Aradhanam sarvesham Vishnu aradhanam param tasmat parataram devi tadiyanam samarchanam. So he understands the topmost goal of life, that to serve the Supreme Lord. So Vaishnava is what we are after. But Vaishnava, it means the same. And for a Vaishnava, it doesn't matter anymore whether one is grihastha, sannyasi, or brahmachari, vanaprastha. The essence is, in all stages of life, one is the servant of the Guru. That is Vaishnava. Vaishnava is always the servant of the Guru. In the Vedic culture, the brahmachari is the servant of the Guru, and then he may get married. But not the devotee. The Vaishnava is always the servant of the Guru. So that is the essence. So if this is our principle, that we are the servant of our spiritual master, then it means, then we are the instrument of transcendental knowledge. So therefore, the Grihastha Ashram in our society, in our movement, is not per se an ashram which is for sense gratification. It is an ashram which is very much meant for cultivation of spiritual knowledge and spiritual life. And therefore, even the Grihastha Ashram is favorable. Still, there is a risk, because the entire world is caught up in activities of sex life, which is described as Maitunya Agra, or the chain of sex life. Just like we are saying the train of thought, or sometimes we compare our thought pattern to a chain, right, of like different ideas. It can be, you see green and you remember somebody who was into green. Like if I say green, immediately I remember Australia, 1984. There was one devotee in the Adelaide Temple. He was totally into green. Everything was green. His clothes were green. Even his white dhoti had a green tint. And he had green kurta, green bead bag, of course. Everything green. And when he cooked, he would put like green food coloring in the salad. So you get like bananas with cream, green, right? Green. And green puris, And everything will green, whatever you do. It's like, so when I say green, naturally I'm thinking of this devotee immediately. I cannot fail to remember him for the rest of my life. You say green, I'll remember. So we have a certain chain of thoughts, or the train of thoughts, as is called, different coaches that are all chained together, right? Like in the train. And it all takes us back. So I could go from green to this devotee in Australia who makes the green puris and everything green, the green bananas. And then that would take me to Australia. So next moment I would be in Australia. Okay, then, you know, so many memories come from Australia. So like this, we go from one association to another, a whole chain of thoughts. And it is said that ultimately, it will always wind up in sex life, in the material world. That is the nature. You go on, you go into these thoughts, you know, one thought, next thought, next thought, next thought, and then sooner or later, there it is. Yeah, it's back to sex life again. So this happens to us so many times in a day that our brains go into these thought patterns. Therefore, we must purify them by regular hearing and chanting constantly, as much as possible, because that will have a great effect in our thinking. It will in our remembering. It will bring out more and more remembrance of Krishna. So this is our process. So Krishna consciousness is not a matter of like dental surgery, where you have to pull out the rotten tooth, or where we have to pull out the rotten, infected attachment from our heart. Pull it out. That is very difficult. It will not work like that. But Krishna consciousness is the process of enthusiastically serving the Supreme Lord and enthusiastically understanding more and more about the nature of the Supreme Lord, about the pastimes of the Supreme Lord. And in this way, gradually, the Lord becomes more and more meaningful to us. And as the Lord becomes more meaningful to us, we will naturally become more and more attracted. Just like the process of attentive chanting. So, in attentive chanting, the root cause of all offenses against the holy name. So it's a big thing. So how to deal with it? Well, okay, you know, is it a matter of just sit properly? So is it a matter of that? Yeah, but what does it mean to sit properly? Does it mean to just sit straight, or does it mean to also have a proper state of mind? And you can go on and on. What is properly? Right? I may sit in the right attitude and think of the wrong things. Is that proper? Anyway, proper meant the proper attitude, obviously. But it's not so easy to conquer inattentive chanting. We can sit properly, we can try. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna. Try very forcefully so that we hear and we hope that we're not chanting inattentively. But still, we manage to chant inattentively. There's always something to distract us. It's very difficult. So, if it is just a struggle of beating the mind and keeping the mind on that Maha Mantra, and if that is our only way to deal with this inattentive chanting, then it seems that we are being defeated every time again. Right? Every day, we're being defeated again as we're chanting our 16 rounds. Right? Is there anyone who was not defeated today? I had a rough time on a plane, which was like, it was going up and down. There was a movie play, I was trying not to watch. All these things, and so I went in the back near the toilets, and then people in and out all the time, so it wasn't easy. So maybe chant a little more. But anyway, it is a struggle to somehow or other conquer this inattentive chanting. So a peaceful environment helps. We can make so many material arrangements to take care that we are well rested, so that we have some energy, and that we didn't eat too much the night before. All these kind of things can help to have some better ability to concentrate. These are the material things one can do. But beyond that, there is another level of attentive chanting, and that is, the more we find out about Krishna, the more we realize how wonderful Krishna is, the more attractive it will be to chant his name. If we realize that Krishna is the most wonderful personality, not just he is the most wonderful personality, but why he is the most wonderful personality, we understand his qualities and the reasons why Krishna is wonderful, then it becomes more inspiring to chant. And in this way, gradually, with time, attentive chanting is not just a process of forcing the mind, right? I have to force this mind and keep it fixed on this holy name, and as soon as there is a slight tendency to go in another direction, pull it back again, from all sides. No, it is rather, as we are appreciating Krishna more and more, through hearing about Krishna and serving Krishna, because we hear about Krishna and we serve Krishna, we make sacrifice for Krishna, and we attract the mercy of Krishna by that sacrifice. So in this way, Krishna will reveal himself more and more to us. The mercy of Krishna ultimately means that we get more adhikar. You have the Kanista Adhikari, the Madhyam Adhikari, and the Uttama Adhikari. And they all have adhikar, or authorization. Authorization to see Krishna. Kanista cannot see Krishna. Krishna is far away. Madhyam, sometime he feels that no, Krishna is close. I may not always see him directly, but I see his hand everywhere. The Uttama may see Krishna directly. Vyasa Prasadat Shrutavan Itad Guyam Maham Param.
Yogam
Yogeshwarat Krishna Sakshat Katayata Swayam. Thank you very much. So it is by the mercy of Vyasadev, Sanjaya was able to directly perceive the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So if we are somehow or other making a sacrifice, to take the order of the spiritual master means sacrifice. Not just to take the order of the spiritual master, but to look for the order of the spiritual master. To even follow the order he didn't give. To live in the spirit of the spiritual master, to think like, how would my spiritual master want me to act in this situation? In that sense, he's there. Because we know what he likes, what he doesn't like, what he would like us to do, what he wouldn't like us to do. And if we don't know yet, then we should learn. And the more we know, and the more we try in every situation, the more close we come to our spiritual master, the more Krishna will be pleased, the more Krishna will reveal himself, the more he will reveal himself in the chanting. And the more we will naturally chant, and the less difficulty we'll have with this inattentive mind that doesn't want to get into this chanting. The more absorbed we become in chanting, naturally. So it's not that the great acharyas are yogis that somehow or other control the mind by great willpower, but rather they are appreciating Krishna, his wonderful nature, more and more due to devotional service, due to hearing, due to the mercy of Guru and Krishna. So this is the process, that through the mercy of the spiritual master and Krishna, everything will be revealed. Maharaj Prithu, he was concerned that as a grihastha, he might become contaminated, and especially as a king. And there is some genuine concern like that, because we see the story of Muchukunda, and we see that Muchukunda was sleeping in the cave, and then Kaliyavana came, and he burned Kaliyavana, and then he woke up, and there was Lord Vishnu. And then Muchukunda had the darshan of the Lord, and he could recognize him, but still Muchukunda was not yet ready to go back to the spiritual world, because Muchukunda still had material contamination. He was still having reactions for all the animals he had killed, and he needed more purification. So even in this, even activities performed in the sense of duty can be contaminating. So this is interesting, because Muchukunda was a king who had to hunt. Now we may not be kings who have to hunt, but we have to take charge in a spiritual institution of various things. So if Muchukunda could become contaminated in the course of his actions, we can also be. We can also, as a temple president, right, go too far in the chastisement of a devotee and actually make offenses, although we were chastising in the cause of our duty, and we may get reactions. So therefore, in all one's dealings with the material energy, one must be very, very careful. I was just reading in The Harmonist some articles, and there was an article about a brahmana, and it said a brahmana, he will never intermingle with the material energy, so that he stays aloof from that as much as possible, only for the minimal survival, but he has no interest in dealing with the material energy. And it said, as soon as you start to deal with the material energy, then the risk of contamination is there. It was a very interesting point. So we see a similar point here. The four Kumaras, they were not mixing with the material energy at all. But Maharaj Prithu was, as a king. So it's a warning to us, because we have to interact with the material energy for the sake of preaching. Yes, have a cell phone. Yes, have the latest state of the art, right? We all do, right? Mix with this material energy. But we have to be careful, because there could be material contamination. Not just in the sense of developing attachment, but even in making offenses in our dealings with the Vaishnavas. That is very important, that we are not in any way blocking the progress of any living entity in spiritual life. The whole world is meant to be the servant of Krishna, and we are meant to assist every living being in his progress in Krishna consciousness. So if we identify with our position of authority, or of position as a Vaishnava, or whatever our position may be, it is so easy to develop a sense of being superior. It's like, well, okay, you know, like, after all, we are Vaishnavas, you know, and they are just materialists. So it's like, you know, what can we do? We are humble, but still we are Vaishnavas, and they are just, you know, fallen. So easy to fall in this trap, but the injunction of the acharyas is sarvupadi viniyamuktam tat paratvenaniyamanam, that we should give all upadi. No designations should be considered. We are simply the servant of all living beings, and everybody is a devotee of Krishna. Only some people know it and some people don't. So if somebody doesn't know it yet, then it is just our business to remind him. And then when he begins to remember, some may advance very quickly, much quicker than we do. and they may surpass us. After some time, they may join much later. We may be instrumental in that they join, and then they may surpass us in surrender and service. That may happen. So, because some people, they may have good karma from last life. They may also have special surrender, and they get and so quick, so much special mercy. So time is not a factor. It's not that automatically because of seniority one is actually superior. But all these tendencies creep in where we so easily, for some reason or other, may develop a sense of superiority. And this is the cause of our downfall. When this sense of superiority is there, that will block us from real spiritual inspiration. And that is the beginning of sense gratification. Because a sense of superiority is actually the materialistic sense of aham mameti, I am I. It is said that on the more subtle platform, I is important. And on the more gross platform, mine becomes important. So, therefore, the sense of superiority means I. And this is again the enjoying spirit, and therefore it is lust, or kama, which is the all-devouring sinful enemy of this world. And as long as we are under the influence of lust, we will not be able to see Krishna. We will not be able to get transcendental taste and so on. So therefore, we must truly develop the mood of being, of not considering ourselves very significant, just being the disciple. Whatever our role is, we are just the disciple of our spiritual master, and our business is to somehow or other remind every living being that he's a devotee of Krishna. And if we dedicate our life to that and forget whether we are brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyasi, etc., then we are on the transcendental platform. And Krishna cannot ignore such a devotee, such a humble devotee. When Rupa and Sanatan Goswami were ministers in the Mohammedan government, they were very eager to see Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and they were so humble when they fell before him that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "Please stop this humility. I cannot bear it. Stop it. It's too much. Stop this. You know, I cannot tolerate this." So that is the one quality that can purchase Krishna. If a Vaishnava becomes the humble instrument of the Lord to bring all living beings back to their original position of devotee of the Supreme. Okay, I'll stop with that. Any questions? Any comments?
And Nishkam means self-contradiction. Is there a relationship between the word of Kanishka that he has no conviction or is it that of
Nishkam? Yeah, that's true. Ka is a word of negation. Yeah. So kanista means actually weak determination, no determination. And in Bengali, the definition given of the kanista is kamala srada, weak faith. Yeah. So he has weak faith. Why does he have weak faith? Because his faith is divided. He has divided faith. Faith is such that everybody has faith in something. Some people have faith in money, some people have faith in power, some people have faith in beauty, right? Some people have faith in a big house with big walls and big doors and big locks. Some people have faith in big dogs. There are different things people have faith in. So faith is always there. So when we come to Krishna consciousness, the problem is that we have some faith in Krishna, but we also have faith in other things. So and then one has to give up the faith in these other things, and that's very difficult. So the Kanista, he has great difficulty in giving up the faith in these other things, and therefore he's progressing very slowly. He's still holding on to his upadis. You know, we had, but I am from an aristocratic family. Oh, are you? Yes, and I have wealth also. Yes, and I am quite good looking, and you know, I'm also very learned, right? In this way, so many material attributes I have, right? So this is the problem, because we have faith. So faith, what does it mean, faith? Faith means that ultimately every living entity is by nature pleasure-seeking. Anandamay vyasat. Right? We are by nature pleasure-seeking. So faith, we have faith that something will give us pleasure. So as long as we believe that anything other than Krishna will give us pleasure, right, then we have a conflict of interest. So this is the problem with the Kanista. He has faith that there's a lot of things that will give him pleasure other than Krishna. And this has to be broken. The Madhyam is more advanced. He is ready to give up this previous faith he had. Right? He'll give it up. The Kanista, he'll give it up very slowly. He says, well, the Kanista doesn't want to give it up. He says, well, you see, because I may give up my material pleasures, and then what will happen is, then I don't get the nectar of Krishna consciousness, and then I have nothing. Then I don't have the material things I have. Yeah, I'll give up everything material, all my material security, and I'll just try to surrender to Krishna, but maybe I don't get so advanced, and then I have nothing. No, I can't do that. So I hold on to my material things, and if Krishna gives me the mercy, then I'll let go of my material things. So first the mercy, then I'll let go. This is Kanista mentality. Yeah. Madhya mentality is, I'll let go of my things. Then we'll see if Krishna gives the mercy. It's the proper mentality. One has to come to that point. First, this is what Krishna wants. First, give up your material things. Although the attachment may be in your heart, don't act upon it anymore. Give it up. Then, in due course of time, you will get my mercy. And Madhyam is ready to wait for that. So Kanista has weak faith in Krishna. So he has to break his faith in the material pleasures. It's false faith. Etiquette is a Western word, and etiquette, the Vaishnav term is actually sadachar, Vaishnav behavior, which is different than just etiquette, because etiquette is like how to behave properly. How to behave, how not to behave, type of thing. Right? It's like, but sadachar is to actually become a saintly person. Right? It's not just the prohibitions, but there's also a lot of positive embracing of spiritual things. And I'm stressing that. I'm also speaking about the rules and restrictions of behavior and dealings. Yes. But the essence of what I'm stressing is the positive behavior of being a devotee. So, what is a devotee's position in terms of I and mine? Well, I means I am a servant. So I'm never a proprietor. I'm the proprietor of nothing. I own nothing. Nothing. Zero. Zero in this world is mine. Very easy. So mine, you don't have to worry about, because nothing in this world is mine. Nothing. That's one thing. And I am just the servant of Krishna and the spiritual master. And everything I have, including my body, is the property of Guru and Krishna. That's all. That's actually the root. And we see that Manasa Deho Geho Yukichu Mo, the bhajan sung by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, is describing that I'm maintaining this house as your servant. It's your house. It's for your purposes. Maintaining my family for your purpose. My children, my servants, all simply for your service. Everything for the service of Krishna. That's actually Vaishnava. Now for us that may be a challenge, right? That may be a lifetime goal to strive for. It's not like that we say, this is Vaishnava, and in this temple anybody who's not up to this standard is in Maya. That's not the mood. The mood is rather that this is the standard, this is the aim, this is the goal, this is what we're striving for as quick as possible, because there's no time to lose, because you never know when you're going to die. So better be a pure devotee today than tomorrow, because you may not make it till tomorrow. I means Krishna Nitya Das. Mine, nothing is mine. Everything belongs to Krishna. Even our bodies. Very simple. It's a high platform. Something to strive for. So that's not like some sort of like heavy, you know, heavy conclusion, you know, that we all should feel poor, heavy. No, this is actually how it is. And we have to... The Vedic culture was a very patient culture. The goals were very high and people were systematically working to progress towards that. So that was wisdom, long-term vision. So we should approach these kind of absolute statements. Nothing is ours, not even our body. We're just a servant of Krishna. We should approach that like with patience and perseverance, with a long-term vision.
So,
yes.
How to arrive at the right attitude?
The message that we give is superior, right? And it's like we are not really superior to anyone, but somehow or other, we have received that superior message. And it is due to that superior message that we may be in a superior position, although we're not superior to anybody, actually. And if they get the message, they can immediately also come to a superior position. So it's the message that is of a superior nature, not we. Right? It is like that, is that we also see like that, that we... In one sense, we don't really change, you know, that much, you know. I mean, in one sense, we are still the same person. Like I can say, have I really changed? Well, okay, I became a little older, so I learned a little bit from experience, but I still have the same character I always had, you know, stubborn and Dutch, and so many things like that. And I still have, but... So many attributes, so much mercy, and all this mercy now gives us insight of how to act in a better way, and therefore one acts on a better platform. And so we are surrounded by all this mercy, and this gradually lifts us up. So it's really the mercy that carries us more than that we are so great. But the mercy is so great that even if we are thinking still, like I gave the example of the train of thought, and it winds up with sex life somewhere, even if that happens, then immediately you say, forget it. You know, this is not worth it. Now, this is a trap. My mind went into a trap again. Pull it back. I will not dwell on this. So this is due to the mercy that we are being pulled out. So in the same way, we may be now in a superior position to others. But we are not superior, but our position is superior because we got superior knowledge, which comes from Krishna. So anybody who lives his life according to the knowledge of Krishna is in a superior position to anybody who's just living his own life of speculation. Naturally. But as soon as they take the Krishna's instruction, very quick, you know, so come in a superior position. Thanks very much. See you, Prabhupada.